All righty. First, I want to thank you again for waiting outside. You guys did a great job, and we really appreciate it here. Did you turn off the speakers in the back?
Sorry.
Okay. And last week Russell just was outstanding last week. Me and a friend were talking, and it's the best I ever heard Russell speak. So I'm gonna put a little pressure on him tonight, maybe maybe even better. But here's Russell doing the seventh.
Thanks. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Every once in a while, somebody comes up and asks me, you know, who didn't make it here. They say, so how'd it go? They're asking me to, like, comment on, as if I even know what I said. But and I said, they didn't throw any stones at me, and I made it out alive. So it is always nice to know or get some feedback that it helped somebody. That's really the blessing. You know, every once in a while, yeah, I haven't had a drink since January 25th, 1981, so I've been around a little over 31 years, so, you know, I get people that call. It just happened the other day. I was at a place, and some guy came up to me and says, you don't remember me, but, you know, 15 years ago, I was at a meeting, and you said something, and I hated you, I thought you were crazy. I get a lot of that. Got a lot of that. And now I'm sober, and, you know, something, you know, she sort of come around, and she wanted to thank me, and she remembered what, she was telling me what I said, and I don't even know whether I said it, but, you know, I get a lot of, you get a lot of that, you know, it's not necessarily what you said, it's what they hear, you know, God's really the one in charge. So I'm going to talk a little about the seventh step tonight, which is a wonderful, wonderful, I think it's a great step. Sometimes they call them old-timer steps, six and seven. Last week we talked about the separation from the men from the boys. We talked about the dilettantes, the two roads, and things like that, And I really want to get into that because I think this is, you know, Bill Wilson talked about emotional sobriety. And he said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. And I'm going to link that up to something that you've heard many times, old ideas. I'm going to link it up. I'm going to suggest that to a certain extent you link up unhealthy dependencies to old ideas. Ideas that you don't want to get rid of. Ideas that you may not even think are bad. As a matter of fact, ideas that you think are pretty good. You want to hang on to them. You know, just like when somebody used to say to you things like, well, maybe you ought to examine your drinking, you'd say, well, why don't you go screw yourself? You know what I mean? You know, you wanted to hang on. We all wanted to hang on to that idea. We hung on to it pretty good. Hey, if you're an alcoholic, I'm proud of you. Give yourself a hand. You hung on to that idea. Through jail cells, divorces, and everything. Hey, you really tried to hang on to that deal, and finally you gave it up, and it was the best thing that ever happened to you. And now you're in some sort of program where somebody told you that the problem was alcohol, and then you hear somebody say, well, alcohol's not even the problem, it's the symptom. The real problem is your mind, not your body. And all you have to do is you got to get rid of these old ideas, or the result is nil until you let go absolutely. What's that all about? Where all those, is it like booze? Is it like a booze thing where you're in denial, where you don't even see it? You know, self-overwhelming, right? Though usually doesn't think so. Is it like one of these deals? Is this selfishness and self-centeredness the root of our problem, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking? We step on toes as others, they retaliate. Alcoholics is an extreme example of self-overwhelming, right? Though it usually doesn't think so. Above everything else, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Does this selfishness take place in so many forms, more than one form, two forms, five forms, 3,000 forms? I mean, how many forms? Does this selfishness appear in my life in such a way so that I don't even know it's selfish? I don't even realize it's selfish. As a matter of fact, I even think it's maybe a good thing. And is it the kind of thing where somebody might come up to me and tell me maybe you ought to examine that, and I'll tell them, why don't you go screw yourself? From the 20, and I'm missing out on the gold, you know, because I don't even see it. I don't even see the deal. I mean, that kind of. So I'm going to read a couple things in the book and from the. Now, some of you have actually come back. You've been here. This is the seventh time I've been here. This is step seven, seventh time. And so you sort of like it. I think, you know, and I really am blessed that you're here, and I enjoy being here. But I think that most of you have come back sort of get an idea. You sort of know where I'm coming from. I think you sort of get the picture. You know, I'm a little bit on the. weird side as far as the God thing is concerned. You know, you know, like I'm into that, you know. I quote from the Bible and stuff like that. I'm not ashamed. You know, I'm not ashamed of that stuff. You can get a lot, you know. I just want to tell you something. You know, these are all my opinions. This is all my deal. This is who I am. The great thing about AA is a total democracy. You can get some guy up here and say whatever he wants to say. You can say, I like that guy. You can say, I like that guy. You know, it's what does it say? It says, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So apparently, you're not even ready to take steps until you find a we, a person, a people, somebody who is somehow manifesting this program in such a way so you can say, I don't know what the guy's got, but I wish I could be like him, or I want what he has, because he's an alcoholic, he's crazy, and I'm crazy, but he's at a different deal than I'm doing, and I'd like to get where he's at. And we all get to pick whoever we decide to follow or look to, or a daddies, mommies, you know, sisters, brothers. You know, if we're looking at that, you know, if you keep on walking in the direction you're walking, you're going to wind up where you're headed. And so I just followed certain people in here because I wanted to be like them. And this guy, almost like a real life race, he would hand me off to the next guy. Who would hand me off to the next guy. It says God will show you to create the fellowship you crave. And ultimately, you're going to look like and be like the people you hang out with. You know, I can tell everything about you just by telling who you hang out with and who you're listening to. And who you, I can tell what your conversation is about. You know, you can tell everything about it. You're going to ultimately be, and when you hear speakers from the podium, old timers, let's say, whatever that is, when you hear from the program, so often you hear people, what do you hear them talking about? You hear them talking about their old sponsor or old Joe. You hear them talk about the men in their lives that they got things from because they realize that it's not about them, it's about the men that, you know, that they watched, they looked to and everything like that. And, you know, somebody said, well, you got a following here. I said, hey, listen, I follow people too. You know, I'm a follower myself. I follow somebody. Believe me, I am on the heels tracking this guy. You know what I mean? I am following him. I am focused on this deal. You know, it says, see to it, your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I'm focused on that deal. So I want to talk about a little bit about the seventh step, maybe in such a way that you haven't seen it before. I like doing that. I always like the expression on newcomers or people who haven't heard me before where their eyes get wide and say, I can't believe he's saying that. I don't think you can do that in AA or something like that. You know, after 31 years, somewhere along the line, I don't know where it happened to me, where I lost the fear of being kicked out of here. I started, you know, somewhere along the line, I realized, I don't think they can kick me out of here. I don't think they can take me, you know, what are they going to do, you know, and that kind of thing. And they, and you know, it really got good when I stopped worrying about what the guy in the front row was thinking about me. Because then I could just be me. And I'm not a bad me. As a matter of fact, I do me better than I do anybody else. And I've been, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you've been trying to do other people all your life, you know. And actually, I decided I'd just be me because it's easier. It takes less energy. So I'm going to read a couple of things. You know, the AA started. I want to tell you a story first. I want to try, you know, I think it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like. Our stories are so important. The weird thing about the story, about the AA stories, and they're all accurate, and, you know, I like to tell them as accurately as I can, is AA is like a kaleidoscope. You know what that? What are those things, those kaleidoscopes? You ever look through those things? Say you look through it, you see all these pretty colors, and then you turn it an inch to the left, and the colors, everything changes. The pattern changes, and you change it again, and the pattern changes. That's what AA is like about. I tell this story. It's a story. I got a story. Okay, I'm going to tell you a story right now. It has to do when I was 3 months sober. And I tell this story. And it has great meaning to me. The story has meaning to me. And maybe it has meaning to you, because when I tell it, sometimes people laugh. Now, you know, the truth is, whatever meaning it has to me, what I think it means to me, how I digest it, is not necessarily what it means to you. It may mean something completely different to you. But here's the weird thing. The same story that I'm telling you now that had great meaning to me about something, and I don't even know what, now when I tell the story, it means something completely different to me. And I can't even explain that. You see, when I first told the story, it meant something about maybe the third step, or maybe the second step, maybe about insanity. And now it has something to do with the seventh step, and I can't explain that. It's just that in here, you know, it says in 1 Corinthians 13, we see through a glass darkly. You know, but soon things will be revealed. It says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. I played with, you know, when I became a man, I put childish things away. Maybe when you start putting childish things away, maybe when the scales start falling from your eyes, maybe when you improve your relationship with God so you can spiritually see things better. You know, isn't it true for everybody in this room who's been sober just even for a short time that things that you never believed or saw or understood before, all of a sudden you get these epiphanies, all of a sudden you see stuff that you never saw. All of a sudden things are so absolutely clear to you that were never clear to you before. How much you changed your mind? I mean, you know, the drinking, the I can't drink and I'm powerless over drinking. I can't hang around people that do drink and I can't go to, you know, I can't do that deal. That is like the first thing that goes. The first thing to go. You go from I can't envision life without drinking to I can't envision drinking again. And that's the first thing that goes. And that's like the first of 50,000 things. You know, I'm a victim. I'm a victim. They're screwing with me. Look what happened to my life. How fast does that go after the fourth step? When you start saying, I can't believe people are still talking to me. I don't even, you know. I mean, the way your mind changes and how you look at things, you start connecting dots and seeing things differently. Well, imagine what happens after 31 years of doing this thing. You know, so I just sort of like expressed to you, you know, some things that, you know, and all of a sudden I talk about stories, and I'm going to tell a couple stories on myself, which sort of like, and read some things in the book, which sort of have to do with the seventh step, you know, and I'm going to let, and I'm not necessarily, I do this, I think it's a good thing. I'm not going to necessarily feed it to you on a silver platter. I'm not necessarily going to draw the lines for you, because, you know, that would be defeating the purpose. It would be unfair to you, because you got to draw your own lines. Hey, I took 31 years to draw my lines. You're going to have to go through the desert and draw your own. You're going to have to figure out the mystery yourself. I'm not going to give you the full mystery. You're going to have to walk out of here and say, what the hell do you mean by that? And have it bother you, or maybe be pissed about it, or be mad about it, or something's bothering you, and then somewhere along the line, you know, why does this bother me? Somewhere along the line, you're going to have to figure out this mystery for yourself, you know, if you don't understand what it is. But all I'm telling you is a true story, and I'm an alcoholic, so it must have something to do with you, if you're an alcoholic. It must have something to do with you. Because there ain't no unique people in here. Ain't nothing new under the sun. So in any event, I want to start off by saying there's a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. If anybody is even interested in what I've got or wants what I have or even interested in what I'm doing, read this book. Read this book. A started in 1935. Trust me, that's when it started. That's when it started. That's the official starting point of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935. In 1939, they published a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, of which the fellowship got its name. Before that, it didn't have a name. They wanted to call it the James Club, named after the book of James. You don't have to like what I'm saying. You just have to, you know, you're entitled to your opinion. You're just not entitled to your own facts. You know what I mean? These are facts, you know? And in the book, in this book, they talk about their experience. They talk about experiencing much of heaven. They talk about being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence before they read the big book. There was no big book. They talk about being this. They talk about remarkable things happening in their lives. They talk about unbelievable stuff happening before they read the big, before the 12 and 12, before any of this stuff. And they say this: if they say this, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They don't even say rarely have seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our steps or read the big book. They say rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And they wrote this book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which described exactly what they did between 1935 and 1939, that four-year period of time. Now, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I you know, met some men that I was attracted to, and they became my AA daddies and brothers. And I voraciously read like the big book and the 12 and 12 and all the stuff that, you know, a lot of us read in here. And what happens is, and I see this happening in AA, it's almost like there's two AAs. It's almost like, you know, say it separates the men from the boys. It's almost like they're two AAs. So I'm just going to give you a little hint about my own deal, okay? There seems to be an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not putting this down, it's just the way it is. You know, it's like they have the two doors that I talked about. I'm not going to go into the not drinking door and the rocket in the fourth dimension door. There seems to be an Alcoholics Anonymous where somehow, some way, there's a cultural understanding that AA started in 1939. Now, let me explain to you what the difference is in 1935. In 1935, this is what they wrote in the book. In 1935, all these stories in the back and the ones that I'm going to read, they were doing this stuff. This is what they wrote. Dr. Bob noting that, this is on page 96, says, Dr. Bob noting that there were no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of. I mean, how do these guys, these are guys we sort of look up to, we sort of worship them. We have a picture of the man on the bed, Bill Dotson on the bed. We see, we read stuff written by these guys that have lasted for decades. We read it with reverence. This is, we have a book called As Bill Sees It. And what these guys did to get there all happened, you ready for this? In the first 4 years, when they didn't have a big book. When they didn't have, everything that we read, that we've got, that nurtured these people, that rocketed the fourth dimension, this big book that we read that has never been changed, all happened to them as a result of something they did during the first 4 years. And 95% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous have no clue as to what they did the first 4 years. Because what they think is they think AA started in 1939. They belong to an AA that started in 1939. And they read everything that happened from 1939 forward, and everything that happened in 1939 forward is legit, and everything happened before 1939 isn't AA. And it says, and I'm not saying I'm guilty, I'm sort of guilty, because I came in on the big book, and it's our basic text, and everybody buys that deal and gets that. And this sort of stuff is like advanced extracurricular reading, you know what I mean? Dr. Bob noting that there were no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of, later said they were convinced that the answer to their problems was in the good book, which is the Bible, the Holy Bible. To some of us older ones, the parts that we found absolutely essential. You understand? They use words like absolute. You know, they say like the great fact is this and nothing less. They talk like, you know, people say, what's the bottom line? What's the answer? They give you the answer and they say, listen, this is what they say. Look at you. Well, you know, we're typical alcoholics. You know, the old AA axiom, you know, the spiritual axiom. I told you back, whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him and he gets mad at it. You know what I mean? And so you got to understand, it doesn't matter if the judge says, I see you again, you're going away for 10 years. It doesn't matter if he says it the wrong way, or if he hurts her feeling, or he says something we don't say, we walk out and say, what the hell was that all about? And then we wind up before the same guy again in 10 years, you're saying, why is this happening to me? You know, it's like my wife said, you come home drunk one more time. You know, if we're not spoon-fed like babies, you know what I mean? And you know, that kind of thing, we don't hear it. And these guys are constantly saying, this is the answer. Listen, stupid, this is the answer. The great fact is this and nothing less. You know, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. You know, if you sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happening. You know, being all powerful, he'll give you anything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. I mean, they say over and over again, this is the answer. We know but the last page, the last line, we know but a little. So your real reliance must be on him. Ask him always in your morning meditation. But the real answer, the answers will come if your own house is in order. I mean, all through the book, a million times, 50,000 different ways, they say what the answer is. It's all about him and his relationship with him. They say it in the 11th step. Dr. Bob, at the end of his story, if you're an atheist, you're an agnostic, have any form of intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what we're saying, we feel sorry for you. You really got to feel sorry for somebody that doesn't get this after it says 1,000 ways because they're so prideful and arrogant and so lack so much humility that they just can't give up that old idea that they're the master of their ship. They're the captain of the deal, and they're in charge. They just can't give up the powerless thing. They can't believe that they can't manage their own life. They can't believe that there's no human power. They can't believe that they can't make things better by just getting things and people and stuff in their life, and they're chasing the same crap after they come in here without drinking that they chased before. They've got the same life going on that they had before that, the same interests, the same centerpiece of their life. It's all the girls, the guys, the romance, the sex, the cars, the money, the same crap that's just driving them to more discussion meetings, you know what I mean? So they can talk about why they're thumb-sucking crybabies and not getting this thing because they refuse to give up that ghost. You understand what I'm saying? Sure you understand what I'm saying. Because you've been to the same meetings I've been to. So there is a group who believes that this deal, so it says, well, let me finish it. It says, the answer to the problem was in the good book. To some of the older ones, the parts we found absolutely essential were the Sermon on the Mount, that's Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, I quoted a little bit from that, and the book of James. You know, that's, you know, basically, now, and as a matter of fact, if you read further in here, there's more references that the first AA meeting was Dr. Bob reading the Sermon on the Mount. He read the Sermon on the Mount. So what happened, and I don't know when I went from being a 1939er to a 1935er. You understand what I'm saying? But somewhere along the line, when I decided I wanted more, you see, here's the deal. I think if I'm asked to do the steps, I have to come out of the closet here, and I got to tell you what's really going on, okay, in my life. Now, you can reject it. You can say it's bullshit. You don't have to do it. But I got to tell you, you know, because, you know, it says in Ecclesiastes, if I don't tell you, then your blood is on my hands. But if I tell you and walk away and you get smashed, I'd say, hey, listen, I told him. So when this guy says, Bill Dotson, in his story, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, he says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And he was like thirsty for more. And I remember at 1 year, I'm still thirsty. I'm thirsty as hell for more. I go to a lot of Bible studies. I do a lot of stuff because I want more. I want more. I want, because this is so good. I mean, it's pretty good. You know what I mean? I mean, it's good. You know, somebody asked me, do you ever go on, when are you going on vacation? I said, my life is a vacation. I said, have you been watching me? My life is a vacation, you know? When I go on vacation, I feel like I'm working. Because I love my life so much with what I'm doing that why would I want to leave vacation to go on vacation? You know what I mean? Why would I want to stand in an airport and get on a plane to fly somewhere when I'm having such a good time here and not spending any money? You know what I mean? It doesn't make any... I mean, is there something wrong with me? Maybe I'm crazy, you know? Why do I have to spend money and put things and go places and do stuff in my life to make me feel better when I feel great right now? Why would I feel great in Denny's, you know? Why would I want to do that? Why do I have to do that? You know, I mean, it's just... I mean, I'm sorry. I'm unapologetic about it. I'm not putting down anybody for flying here and going there, and I've done all that stuff, Europe and all that. I mean, I got a wife, I got to do that, you know. You got to do that. You know, I got to do that. But so the bottom line is, so I wanted more. So when I wanted more and more, it leads you to different people. It leads you to different places. When you don't want more, it's like in the sixth step. You settle. You settle. This is good enough. I'm not drinking. You settle. And in this game, you settle, you start falling backwards, and all of a sudden you got 20 years, and you're hanging in there, and you know, you're not, and you hear somebody like me say, I don't understand that guy at all. My life ain't that like that. I'm not feeling that way. So somewhere along the line in my quest for getting more and hanging around with these guys who led me to that guy and everything, what happened was I discovered that AA started in 1939. And I made a decision that the years between 1935 and 1939 counted. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, most people think that the only thing that counts is what's written in this book in 1939 on. And I made a decision that AA started in 1930. I'm a 1935 AA-er. I made a decision that AA started in 1935. And that the first 4 years counted. And the more I got into it, then I started reading what they did in the four years. And the more I started getting into what they did the first 4 years, the more my life changed. And the more my life changed, the more exciting it got. And the more I read what they did in the first 4 years, I realized that in the first 4 years, they said that what they got really came from something 2,000 years ago. And so my idea of what AA is and what AA is about and what the full deal is here in order to get to that deal, you know what I mean? It might be a little bit different than your idea. And it probably comes across in meetings. You know, I'm not constrained by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 and 12, and anything that's published by Works Publishing Company or whatever it is up there. The trustees of Alcoholics Anonymous really aren't my higher power. The Carl Gables Group is not my higher power. Okay? I mean, I'm not saying it can't be yours. You know, my sponsor is not my higher power. You know, because I got such a messed up life, you know, I need somebody a little more powerful than that deal. You know what I mean? So that's the way, so you got to understand, after many years of doing this, that's how I come at that deal. So, in Sermon on the Mount, one of the quotes from Sermon on the Mount, it says, enter through the narrow way, narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. Many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only few find it. And when I first came in here, the first thing I remember my sponsor saying to me, he says, you know, Russ, many are called, but few are chosen. And I never understood what he meant by that. He said, many are called, but few are chosen. And until I was in AA for many years and watched many, many, many people start this journey off and sponsored hundreds of guys, I realized that many are called and few are chosen. It's not even that many don't make it to AA. The truth of the matter is that maybe of all the people that make it in there, very, very few make it to 20 years. And even the ones that make it to 20 years, very few of them are truly happy. You know, most lives, people are living lives of, of desperation, quiet desperation. You know, just having real problems, just a lot of difficulties. You know, and so when I... You know, and so something happened to me in here. As a result of working these steps and doing it the way I'm doing it, something happened to me. Because you know what? You can't quarrel with results. You know, the proof is in the pudding. You can't quarrel with results. And something happened to me. So when I'm up here, what I'm sharing is what happened to me. Because I'm crazy enough to think that people are here because they want this thing. I'm crazy to think that people want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You know, they want to experience much of heaven. They don't want to spend lives worrying every day. They're always having something going wrong, something, some sort of drama, some sort of novella, some sort of, they don't want to be, why is this always happening to me? I've been going to meetings, I've been doing this, when is this going to stop? You know, I'm under the opinion that people, really at 9 years or 10 years or 15 years, are asking themselves, when is it going to get better for me? When am I going to get what these guys are talking about? Why aren't I getting this thing? I think maybe that's why people go to step meetings. That's why I went to step meetings. I went to step meetings because they said, maybe this guy has the answer as to why I'm 15 years sober and every once in a while I want to blow my brains out. Maybe this guy has the answer as to why I'm 12 years sober and all I do is worry about money all the time. All I do is worry, I'm lonely, or I don't feel like I'm connected. Well, maybe he has the answer of, you know, how I can start wearing life like a loose garment instead of have things affect me so much. Maybe this guy has that answer. And I thought it was never going to happen for me. Because I had to go through the desert time like everybody else. I had to persevere just like it says in the book of James. You know, you read the book of James, it makes it very clear. They wanted to call the... It says, rejoice when you have problems. Rejoice. You know what it's... You know, how many people do you know rejoice and say, man, I got fired. I'm excited. You know what I mean? We're going to study a step tonight. You know what the step is going to say? When you're being crushed, it's a real good thing. When you got all the money in the world and everything's going your way, it's bad. When you're being, that's an old idea. You see, you have an old idea. Here's your idea. Your idea is if you can get things in your life, you can get all the money and all the gals and all the guys and all the cars and all the things in your life, and you can get that going for you, and basically that's how you propel your life along, trying to get those stuff, then you'll be okay. That's not AA. AA is about character building. A is seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness and everything else. So A is first work on your character. Work on, you see, alcoholism is get the stuff and run over people and kill them, smash them, and feel sorry for yourself if you don't have it, no matter what, because that's the most important thing. And then they'll all respect you and you'll like you because you feel like such a piece of crap. You don't respect and like yourself, so you need to have a car, you need to have all this. And what A is let's work on yourself and your respect for yourself and your relationship with God. And then whatever comes is going to come, and whatever is not going to come is not going to come, but it's not going to matter because your flipping life is going to be a vacation anyway. Because you're going to learn to be content in all things. But you see, it's very hard for people to give up that old idea about the stuff, about the pelf, about the things. But if you read in the book, that's all they're saying to you. They say it in so many different ways. I'm going to read a couple parts for you. But in any event, and you know how they say we got to, you know what they have to say in the seventh step? We get humility about this, and we learn about this. Because life, let me tell you something, life is tough. Life will beat you down. They say, how do we get a new perspective? By hundreds of forms of humiliation and the final question of our self-sufficiency. This is right out of the seventh step, out of the 12 and 12. I was 3 months sober, and I was driving in a car with my sponsor, Bob Sullivan, at the time. I've had three sponsors. And, you know, and Bob was, we were driving to pick up a guy named, what was his name? Bob. We were driving to pick up a guy named Bobby. Bob is my sponsor. Bobby is the guy we're going to pick up. Bobby was like my litter mate. You know, he sponsored me and Bobby. I picked up a white chip, never drank again. Not bragging about it or anything. It's, you know, it's the Lord's work and everything like that. I don't take any credit for it. I never picked up a white. Bobby's road was a little bit more difficult. Bobby would pick up the white. He picked up the white chip, and like 60 days later, he drank again. And then we pick him up at Bark, you know, up here. We pick him up, and Bob would give him, you know, like a, you know, some new clothes, and give him a place to stay, give him a few bucks, give him a job. And then he'd say, "This time I'm really going to do it. I'm really going. Everybody say, I'm really going to do it this time." And then he'd do it. He'd be great for 60 days. And then like 60 days, you ever hear guys say things like this in AA? It's coming to that time again. You know what I mean? Yeah, I always drink at 60 days. I always drink at 90 days. You know, I mean, it's like they're on a timer, you know? It's like a countdown, you know? And, you know, listen, well, you see, then you don't have to take responsibility for it. You don't have to take responsibility for it. It's not your fault. It's the 60-day thing. You know what I mean? It's God's fault, you know? You're on a timer 60 days. You're just one of these guys, you never get sober because in 60 days, it, like, comes upon you. You know what I mean? And, well, Bobby was a 60-day guy. And so I'm hanging around Bob. It's like 3, 4, 5 months down the road. And you know how many 60 days have gone by? I've done this Bark trip with him like 7 or 8 times picking up Bobby, you know? And of course, I'm sober. I'm stark raving sober, you know, member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything is pissing me off, you know? You know? Everything is bothering me, you know? And so I'm not too happy about Bobby, you know, and what he's doing. And I'm really not happy because he's taking advantage of my sponsor who has like 20 years, who's really not smart enough to realize, he's just too nice a guy to realize he's being taken advantage of. So the bottom line is I'm in the car and we're driving up to, and I've been rehearsing this resentment against Bobby, you know, for a while, and I start giving Bob my closing argument, okay? I can't believe we're going up to pick this guy up. You know, we did the same thing 60 days ago. We did the same thing 60 days before. I'm citing chapter and verse, and I mean, I am so right. You know, this is the same sponsor who said to me, "Russ, would you rather be right or happy?" I said, "I want to be both." He says, "You never be both. Because if you got to be right, you'll always have to have the last word. You'll always get into arguments. You'll always worry why they're not agreeing with you and everything like that. You'll never be happy." And I couldn't even. You know, this is one of those deals where you don't even understand what he's talking about. I mean, this is like one of these deals. Like he's talking, it's like Zen or something. And you don't even know what he's talking about. It doesn't even make sense to you. Of course, it's important to be right. You know. And, you know, this is one of these deals that has to be beaten out of you. After you get beaten up long enough, and finally you say, "I don't want to be right anymore, I just want to be happy. I'm so sick of being right, it's killing me," you know? And then you say, "Okay, how can I be happy?" Well, this is very easy. Shut up. You know what I mean? This is simple. Shut up. But shut up. Don't say anything. You know? It's entitled to their opinion, you know? It's not, you know. So in any event, yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But here's the deal. So I give him this great argument. I got all the evidence through my 5 cards. I got photographs and everything like that. And we ought to turn this car around. And we ought to forget this guy. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about it. He's just using you. And that's it. You know. And I probably repeated myself 10 times because that's what alkies do. You know. And you know, I'm sitting there. And I stopped talking, but, you know, I'm still having the conversation in my mind with the audience that's living in my brain, you know, and because you know how alcoholics are. You know, and so he says, he looks at me, says, "Are you done?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah." He says, no, "Are you done?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "No, are you done? Are you done? Are you done? Are you finished?" I said, yeah, I'm finished. And I'm waiting to hear what he has to say because there's nothing he can say. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I'm a practicing lawyer. You know, I've got all these degrees and everything like that. This is the guy who said, when I showed him my degree, he said, this is the same guy who said, degrees, you know, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those, you know. So this is the guy, you know. So he said, "Are you done?" And I'm waiting because there's nothing he can say because I was so right. You know, I was like Alki right. You know, if you disagree with me, you have to die because you're so stupid. You know what I mean? You know, I was like, you know, so, I mean, you should be killed. You shouldn't be allowed on the planet, you know? And this is why alcoholics should never be given nuclear weapons. Because, you know, it would seem like a good idea to me to wipe out everybody except maybe Fred. You know what I mean? Because they're all stupid, you know? They don't deserve to live. So in any event, so he looks at me and says, "Are you done?" And I said, and this is what I said. I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Russell, now get this. I'm waiting to hear what he's going to say, right?" This is what he says to me. I'm waiting for the comeback. This is what he says to me. This is what old timers, this is the bullshit you get. Never get into a fight with an old timer. But you know, you hang around with these people, you learn a lot. You learn a lot because they think differently. This is what he said. He said, "Russell, listen to me." He says, "Yeah, yeah." He says, "No, listen." He says, "Russell." He says, "What? What? What? What?" He said, "Listen, you ready for this? It doesn't bother me like it bothers you." How can it not bother you? It's killing me, you know what I mean? See, I was hitting him with facts and he was hitting me with AA magic. I wanted everything he had, and I didn't even understand what he had. And he wanted nothing I had. He had what I had a long time ago. That's how we went through life. That's what, you know, that's why we drink alcohol, because he had what I had. Alcoholism. Getting pissed at everything. You know what I mean? 9 years sober. 9 years later. After doing step series, after reading the book, after sponsoring people, I called my sponsor, Joe at the time. Bob had died since then. And I started telling him about my wife and what she did, and this, and did that, and did the other thing, because I don't know how many people here have like 10 or 15 years sober or something like that, or, you know, whatever, still being actually affected by life. But, you know, actually, it's a wonderful thing to be sober. It's a wonderful thing to have a fellowship. It's a wonderful thing to have this. I would never give it up. But there was a point in time, I would say the first 20 years, 25 years, whatever it is, where you're, I'll put it this way, you seem to be unduly affected by the shit that's going on around you. That's the only way I can express it. You're in hand, you love life, you've got these new tools, you're not hurting so badly, but somehow, some way, it's always getting to you. They're pushing your buttons. They find your button somewhere and they push it, you know? Somehow, some way, no matter how much you read, no matter how many meetings you go to, you're in hand-to-hand combat with the crap that's going on. I mean, it's always something. Even stuff you get, and all of a sudden, you get a letter from the IRA. It's unbelievable. When is this going to stop? And I'm 9 years sober. And I'm on the phone with my sponsor. I'm talking about my wife. And I'm married. I got kids and all this sort of stuff. I'm talking about my wife and what she did and what she said, because whatever, she did something. She wasn't following directions. She wasn't obeying. I wasn't getting my own way. Whatever it was. You know, and it was upsetting to me. You know, it was the money. It was the this. It was the that. And after I was done screaming, almost like the same thing that I did like 9 years before, you know. But now I do it more like an AA. It sounds a little bit less unsober, you know. So he finally says to me, he says, "Do you know why you're upset?" I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Do you know why you're upset?" I said, "Well, yeah, of course I know why I'm upset." He says, "Well, why are you upset?" And I said, "Well, I just told you why I'm upset." He says, "What do you mean?" I said, I just spent 20 minutes telling you what my wife did. I told you in minute detail everything she said and everything I did. And then you may say, you know, you'd be upset, you know, all that. So he says, "That's not why you're upset." I said, "That's not why I'm upset." He says, "No, that's not why you're upset." He says, "That's not why I'm upset." Says, "No, that's not why you're upset." And then he shut up. And, you know, what happens is if he says something like that and he shuts up, it forces you to say something like this. "Well, are you going to tell me why I'm upset?" Because, you see, if he told me why I was upset, I would have shit on it. I would have pissed. I would have said, "Oh, that you're full of crap." But he made me, he said, then he did this. He says, "Do you really want to know?" These old timers are dastardly. You know, I said, "Yes." He says, "Why am I upset?" He said, "Listen, stupid." He said, how my sponsor's talking. He says, "Listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable." I didn't understand what he was talking about. So often you're given the answers by old timers that are the truth answers, but the first reaction is, "What the hell is he talking about?" Because when you live in a world where you're hanging on to old ideas, you know, where you haven't had these shortcomings and these ideas removed, and you're not willing to have them removed, and you haven't gotten beaten out of you, when you live in the world where you think the way you want to think, and you refuse to leave the way you think to think a different way, or look at things another way, what happens is, when people say things that are really from the spiritual realm, it doesn't make any sense to you. because it's not the way most of the world, but somehow it's intriguing enough that you know that he's saying something that's worthwhile. You don't understand why he's saying, and you know, the truth is, if you understand what he was saying the same thing my sponsor said to me when I was driving in the car with him 9 years before. Do you know what he said to me? You remember what he said to me? He says, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. He said to me, but he basically said, I understand everything you're saying. It doesn't upset me. He could have said, you know why you're upset? Because you're upset. He could have said the same thing. But I didn't understand what 9 years before he had given me the answer. He said, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. Which is why I was, and 9 years later, after all these steps and doing everything, being a 1939 guy, you know what I mean? I was still upset. I was still upsettable. And a lot of things were upsetting me. And even though we had a spirit accident, whenever you're upset, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. There was a lot. And life has a way. And this is why it says in the 12 and 12 in chapter 7, it says this. It says we begin to see the value of suffering. Because if we don't suffer, if we don't get upset, if we don't suck our thumbs, if we don't yell and scream and cry and whine and go to a sponsor and say, bah, nah, 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 we never even have a shot of hearing you're upset because you're upsettable. Because if everything's going great for us, and we got all the money and the stuff in the world, we're just basically spoiled brats and we never have to change because everything's okay. Everything's okay. We only change within the pain. The pain is the touchstone. The suffering is the suffering over and over again for 9 years, 10 years, 15 years. How many times am I going to go there? That's the thing that drives us to want more. Because if we weren't suffering, the sad news is some people don't suffer that bit. They're just going to go until they're, you know, the old story about the dog on the porch. You know, Appalachian guys, you know, hillbillies with the dogs on the porch. And every once in a while the dog goes, or something like that, yelps. And one guy says, what's wrong with your dog? He says, well, there's a nail sticking up from the porch. And every time he breathes, it hurts him. So he yelps. He says, well, why does he move? Well, I guess it doesn't hurt enough. So until it hurts enough, you don't move. You know, I mean, you don't move from that idea that romance will solve the problem unless it hurts enough. And for us, over a period of time, over and over again. You don't move to get a grip on the financial ends or all the other things that are going on in your life and all the other, all that, until it hurts. And let me tell you something, with all this other stuff we have going on, it takes years and years and years and years and years of being pounded and pounded and pounded. And somehow, if you're really into this thing, as you're being pounded, as you're being killed, there's two ways of doing this. You can say, I'm out of here, or feel sorry for myself, or suck your thumb and then drink again. Or get more bitter and bitter and just try to make it through the day because the whole thing's about not drinking, and then you can become 18 years sober and a whack job and say and pick up the medallion and say, I'm hanging in there, but never experience happiness because you never really change inside. You're just sort of like white knuckling this whole deal. Or you can somehow come to the conclusion that you need to do more or do something, or there's something. I was talking to some gal on the phone and she was telling me about whatever it is, that wasn't working for her, she's trying again, and I said, well, I know what the answer is. She says, you know the answer? I said, sure, I know what the answer is. She says, well, what's the answer? He says, you just have to do everything you are unwilling to do. All you have to do, it's simple, it didn't work. He says, just do everything you were unwilling to do. That's the, whatever you were unwilling to do, just do it. That's the answer. Whatever you're unwilling to do, you need to do it. Whatever you thought was stupid, do it anyway. You're unwilling to do that thing with the God thing. You're unwilling to do that. Just do it. Then you'll get it. You know, as long as you hung on to your stubborn old ideas and refuse to let them up, you're not going to get it. That's what's going to happen. So here's the deal. This will take 5 minutes. We got 5 minutes. Let me just, what's the problem? Here's the problem. Let me read you some things out of step 7. I touched on this last week. One of the greatest problems with alcoholics is materialism. Big deal. Big problem. We talked about this last week. I'm not going into it. You can listen to the tape or whatever. It says, certainly no alcoholic, but I'm going to read this. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. Hey, listen. What do you all really think about most of the day, time? What do you think about?
Money.
Is the central fact of your life God, your creator? You know, they say, they've been rocking in the fourth dimension, the central fact of our lives is the absolute certainty that our creator, is that the central part of your life? You think about God all the time? You think about Bible verses all the time? You think about that, you know, listen, I got to tell you something. I got a lot of problems. I'm not perfect at everything, but I find the more I'm enmeshed in that stuff, you say, why do I go to Bible studies? Because the more Bible studies I go to, the more verses I read, the more I'm into the Word, the more I'm into this. And you know, I find myself just thinking about it all the time. You will think about who you associate with. You want to associate with people that are talking about what the sale is that's going on in Saks? You're going to think about the things you have, the things you want, and the things you don't have. You want to hang around with guys who are talking about getting laid? You'll think about the girl you don't have, the girl you have, or the girl you want. You want to hang around with people that are going to talk about sports or whatever it is, and that's there's nothing wrong with any of this stuff, I suppose, in moderation or whatever, but we don't know anything about moderation in here. Now, you think I'm talking about my own opinion? Well, you can call my own opinion, but I'll read you what it says on page 71. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. Nor do we enter into a debate with so many who still passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. Why would they be writing this to us if it wasn't like I'm saying? They notice the same thing I notice about myself, about other alcoholics. Whenever I have an alcoholic complaining to me or crying to me on the phone or calling me up or they're going to drink or they're going to kill themselves, you think it's about God? You think they're calling me up because they got a trouble with something they read in Scripture? You know what I mean? I can't believe I read this in Scripture. I want to kill them. Or do you think it's about a girl? Or do you think it's about a car? You know, what do you think? But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more of our share of security, prestige, and romance. That's right, gals. Romance is plugged right in there. I know that's hard to believe, but it's plugged right in there like a car, like a thing to be possessed. That if I have romance, if I just have a white picket fence and a guy who loves me and a house in the country, I'll be wonderful. No, you won't. You'll be drunk. You know what I mean? You'll be drunk. You'll be drunk because I know guys. The guy's going to get tired of you. He's going to die or leave, and then you'll be drinking over that crap. You know what I mean? And you'll be looking for another guy, okay? You know that, and I know that. So we're going to live with this wacky alky broad, okay? For thousands of years, we have demanded more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. And all these striving, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap would have been our lack of humility. And that's not the only place they talk about this stuff. Let me just read just a couple more fast things from the book. You know, and you may not even think... When you read these, when I first read these, I didn't realize that they were talking about this stuff. Because you think, you go to working with others. So you think they're talking about what? Working with others. You know, how to work with a newcomer from the beginning. You know what they're saying from the beginning? You know what we say to newcomers from the beginning? Look to God, forget about all the stuff. Look to God, forget about your wife. Look to God, forget about your family. Look to God, forget about those guys. Look to God, forget about the job. Look to God. That's what we're telling newcomers all the time. That's what we're supposed to burn into their mind. The seven-step stuff. You know, our problem is they have to get sober. We forget about that. Here's what it says. It's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. How a person is going to do in here, and whether he's going to make 20 or 30 years, depends, quite frankly, as to whether he gets this deal. If you don't get this deal, either from the beginning or somewhere along the line, that none of the stuff that you think about or worry about means anything, and the whole thing is about your relationship with God and the focus on it. If you don't get this deal, you're going to have a sorry time in here. And you may stay sober, but you're not going to be happy. You know, and you just look at Bill Wilson's story. Just go to Bill Wilson's story and why he drank. He said it right in his story. He says here, it says, the real significance of my experience at the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I needed and wanted God, for there had been a humble willingness to have him with me. And he came. But soon, the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly within myself. And so it's been ever since, how blind I have been. What do you think he's talking about? He said when he was focused on God and he was looking to God and he was saying to Henrietta Seiberling, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. Cure me of this terrible disease. I keep on telling people. Everything was wonderful, you know. As soon as he started looking at the gals, the cars, the money, it all turned to crap. It's all the same stuff. It's all consistent. You can read this all through this. This is why we wind up on the 11th step. This is why we have the third step. It's all about this stuff, which, quite frankly, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I've had a lot of people tell me this is true, I don't think it's emphasized too much in AA. I think people are offended when you talk about this stuff. Even if you read it out of the book. Even if you read it straight out of the book, forget about it. You just read it out of the book. You say, I don't want to hear that stuff. That's like personal. Now you're meddling. You know what I mean? The most important stuff that they say burn into people's mind, they want to stay clear of that stuff because, you know, we don't want to talk about it. It's like religion. You know, it's not religion. It's this. It's what the answer, it's the whole program. It's what the program is about. And as you get into this, I mean, I'm sorry to break the news to you. You know what I mean? I mean, you can do this thing by the numbers and make believe and do AA light and be a dilettante and sort of pick up the medallions and go to the toga parties and all that, you know. And I was so happy to hear about the chili and, you know, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong, the stew, whatever. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. If you want, look, I was 9, 10, 15 years sober. And I was saying to myself, after my 18,000th time sucking my thumb over some other problem that happened in my life. You're alcoholics, right? Okay, so you know what it is like to have a problem that you're worried about? Does anybody, you know what it's like to have a problem? This used to happen to me. There would be something going on in my life. Everything would be perfect. Except for one thing. One person, one situation, at work, here, there, and my whole mind was consumed with worry. I'd be going to meetings talking about it, going to my sponsor and talking about it. I'd be praying, I'd be consumed with worry. You know, and you want to know something? It'd go on for days, sometimes weeks. Now, I'd be sober, I could do meetings, I could do step meetings, I could talk to people, I could sponsor people. But somehow in the back of my mind, I mean, the joy of my life was being sucked out by anxiety. You know, and you know, I'm telling you, 15 years sober, I'm saying to myself, when am I going to stop having to feel this way? When is this stuff going to stop? I thought it was never going to stop. You know what I thought? I thought that's just the way it is. You just worry and suck your thumb until the day you die. You just look prettier. And you pick up medallions. And I would see these guys, like my sponsor, and they're saying things, you're upsettable. And they're like, it's not even touching them. And I'd say, when can I have that? You want something? It's available. I promise you. I'm telling you, there's cement under those lily pads. This isn't bullshit. That is absolutely available to you, okay? But it's a narrow gate. It's not a wide road. It's a narrow gate. It's not going to be available, I can promise you, on your terms. It's not going to be available with you doing this program the way you want to do this program or what's comfortable to you. It's available to you. It's written down in this book. It's written down in this book. You just do what you said. It's available. You don't want to do it. You want to try it your way. You try it your way. See how that works out. Okay, thank you very much. God bless.